We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
We're gonna play on and stand strong with Drolo and Dibs. Turn the game on. Pump up the volume. It's time to play ball with Drolo and Dibs. Turn the game on.
All right, boys and girls, welcome to the championship rounds of Drolo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Thank you for riding shotgun with us on this Wu-Tang Wednesday. Appreciate it as always. Today's show brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. If you take exception to anything you've heard so far, feel free to hit the complaint line, which is also known as the Chilton Auto Body text line. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Let's go to the phones right now. He covers the Giants for the San Francisco Chronicle. Check out his new book, 24. Life Stories and Lessons from the Say Hey Kid, John Shea, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. John, good morning. We appreciate your time. As you know, we are compiling a fan vote of the 10 greatest Bay Area athletes of all time. Willie Mays has come in at number 6 on the list. Many are arguing that's too high for the Say Hey Kid. What say you?
I say, come on, fellas. Really?
Well, we're not responsible for it. It's the fans. Take it up with the people, John, not with us. We're just the messengers.
I was asked to come on to discuss Willie Mays' ranking on your top 10 list in the Bay Area. I had assumed you already went through 2 through 10. And then I'm asked to discuss your number one guy, the great Willie Mays. Now I'm hearing you. Six? I mean, what country did you solicit to get these votes?
I think we went to Youngstown because all the young people who didn't have the opportunity to see Willie Mays, and I certainly didn't see him. I was born in 68, so even if I, as a zygote, had caught the tail end of his career, I still wouldn't have seen the true greatness. What do we miss, John, in not only having him ranked so low, but the greatness that was Willie Mays on the diamond?
Well, he was more of a ball player. I mean, he was a ball player, but he was an entertainer. I mean, if you look back at his record and what he did on and off the field as a baseball player, as an American, I mean, he was a peacekeeper and a uniter. I mean, he's the one who dragged Johnny Roseboro off the field in a sea of Dodger blue after Roseboro got clubbed by Marichal. I mean, he's the one who prevented that mutiny in the Giants clubhouse when so many minorities were ready to walk out on the team because of the racist ways of Alvin Dark. And, you know, he's the one that spoke with all these guys. Joe Morgan swears by Reggie Jackson, Maury Wills, Frank Robinson, McCovey, guys who came behind him. Even the great Hank Aaron, who's 3 years younger, I'll swear, you know, for his leadership. I mean, he's the guy who was the first great African-American superstar after World War II who led the way for other black athletes. Bill Clinton told me Willie Mays made it absurd to be a racist. And he's the guy, you talked to Bob Kendrick at the Negro League Museum, said Willie Mays validated all the ball players in the Negro Leagues because of what he did, because of how he played, because of how he conducted his life, and because of how he fought racism on his terms. And now you guys put him sixth? Wow. How did that come about? I'm just curious. Why is he sixth on a list of top 10 Bay Area, not in the world, not in the U.S., Bay Area?
I just think it's a younger crowd that, you know, they think of guys like Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, and Steph Curry, the three-point all-time leading three-point shooter. He set the record 400 threes. So it is definitely skewed. But there was something you said there, and I'd like to get more into that. When you talked about Willie and talking about what he did for, you know, men of color, and talked about how he just, you know, brought it to the forefront and he stood for equality. When you look at the Negro League, would Willie have been Willie if everyone would have been able to play and everyone was given a fair opportunity? What would that league have been? And can you still think that his record would have still been as dominant as a player if it was more equality?
Of course, he could have played in any era and excelled in any era and dominated any era, but if you include all the Negro Leaguers going back early 1900s, I mean, Mays might not have been the number one player of all time. As we saw in the ranking at The Athletic, Joe Posnanski came up with his top 100 baseball players of all time, and he had Ruth second and Mays first. I mean, there's a guy, Oscar Charleston, who they said was Mays before Mays, a wonderful center fielder back in the day. And they said, you know, he was better than Mays. And if he's better than Mays, and I spoke with Monty Irvin, who knew these guys and knew and played with them, and he says, hey, man, Mays is great, but there are some other players in the Negro Leagues who are just as good, if not better. I mean, this was Willie's teammate in New York. So, yeah, Willie would have been every bit as good as he was in this era. I spoke with Scott Boras, who said that, you know, he could have been making $50 million this year. You know, if you're going to give a pitcher 35, Willie Mays in this era would have made 50. And, I mean, it just attests to his greatness. Well, let me ask you guys something. I mean, you guys are Bay Area historians. I mean, you got your pulse on the, you know, sports world, everything Bay Area sports, Bay Area culture. Where did you guys rank Mays?
I didn't put him on the list, I'll be completely honest. The main reason was that I've never seen him play a game of baseball. I think for me to come out and say, Willie Mays is great because of X, and I've never seen him play, I don't know if I want to use the word disingenuous, but I just didn't feel authentic with it. So essentially, I probably took a cop-out and created a scenario where I was only going to grade the guys I had watched throughout the course of their career. Now, if I'm going back in time and I'm just grading absolute greatness, and we talked about this in the last segment, Mays might be at the top of the list because baseball players rely less on their teammates, at least in my opinion, than anybody else out there. You know, Montana relying on Rice relying on Montana. But then it's Bonds and it's Mays and it's just you against the pitcher. And it's just you trying to swipe that bag. And it's you trying to catch that ball in the outfield. So ultimately, the case for number one is completely visible in my opinion.
Well, all due respect, I mean, there are history books and there is video. He made a catch in 1954 that was pretty good. It's in black and white, but still, it was pretty good. Game one of the World Series, he went way back at the Polo Grounds and made a catch and made a throw, and it kind of set the momentum for the World Series sweep of the mighty Indians. But, I can see your point. That's why, you know, I haven't seen Wilt Chamberlain mentioned. I haven't seen guys like that, even though it was just a few years. I saw Deion Sanders mentioned somewhere, and I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. He was here 1 year, and you're taking 1 year of Deion over the greatness of Mays over the course of the career he spent in San Francisco, who lived here, who lives here, who does all that stuff for the community. And I'm just curious how that works. Why would you pick Deion over Mays?
That's a failure on the criteria. The literal criteria was that you only needed to appear as a professional in the Bay Area at some point during your career. And once that box was checked, you could use anyone you wanted. So, for example, you could make the case for guys that were here for 1 year but went on to be absolutely great. Now, if we had said the majority of your career had to be in the Bay Area, Deion Sanders is obviously off the list, as are others, but we never said that. The only criteria was that you were here professionally at some point, and then from there, off we went running. Let me throw it back to you on something, John, because I'm curious. In terms of, you've made so many great points about Mays regarding his contributions to the game, not just on the field, but if we're talking on the field, him versus Barry Bonds, you still take Mays?
Yes, in a heartbeat. Why?
Is it close?
Because... No, I don't think Bonds has been mentioned yet, and Ricky hasn't been mentioned. I did a book with Ricky as well. I mean, I love those guys on the field. They were left fielders. Willie was the center fielder. And you have yet to mention Ricky. You have yet to mention Barry. Both 5-tool players, but Willie took it to another level. Obviously, Barry didn't throw like Willie, didn't run the bases like Willie, didn't defend like Willie. So right away, you got three out of the five tools in Willie's favor. But Willie did them all together. If you look at Barry's career, he was really two guys. In the 90s with the Giants and in the Pittsburgh, I mean, he did it all, right? He did the five tools. But then in the 2000s was a hitter, period. He didn't run the bases. He didn't make the diving plays. He didn't defend like he did in the 90s. So Willie, throughout his career, did all of that stuff. I mean, when he was 40 in 1971, he led the league in on-base percentage and walks and 16 home runs. I mean, Bonds did all of that and a lot more, obviously. But when you look at the consistency, like every single year, he won two MVPs, but I spoke with a bunch of analytic experts in the game and came away from those conversations thinking he could have won anywhere between 8 and 11. Because every single year it was like Trout, it was like LeBron, it was Kobe. Every single year was 40 homers, 100 RBIs, you know, 20, 30 steals, and across the board defensive metrics. So Willie did it across the board. Plus, he had maybe the best sixth tool of all time because he outsmarted you, and he anticipated and envisioned and led. He was the first African-American captain in the history of the game. And he, according to all the teammates I interviewed, was the manager. I mean, he directed people where to go. He told the manager who to play. He told the pitcher how to face catch. So he did so much more than what you see on the field.
When you were writing the book 24, Life Stories and Lessons from the Say Hey Kid with Willie Mays, how much time did you spend with Willie, and what was maybe the most fascinating interview outside of Willie that you did for the book?
Well, Willie and I did the math, and we figured we spent more than 100 hours together on the project. But I interviewed more than 200 people, including Bill Clinton and George Bush, who were big-time Willie Mays fans as kids. I mean, he was their guy, both growing up in the South and both becoming presidents. And, you know, the first ball player they ever loved was Mays, and they had great stories about it. But Hank Aaron was unbelievable, and Monty Irvin. And going back to Birmingham and spending time with his childhood buddies, and a guy named Bill Greeson, just a fascinating character. He was a rookie with Willie on the 1948 Birmingham Black Barons and is an American hero three times over because he fought in Iwo Jima. He was the Cardinals' very first African-American pitcher, and he's been a pastor, giving sermons every Sunday. He's in his 90s and still does it. So he's been saving lives and inspiring people his entire life. And, you know, more should be known about that guy. He's heavily included in the book. But folks like that really made this project amazing. Of course, all the time and access Willie gave me was unparalleled.
John, final question for you, and it relates to the present-day Giants. How do you think the organization handles prospect Joey Bart this season?
Well, we'd all like to see him play, everybody in the press box, everybody in the media, all the fans, because maybe the Giants are not going anywhere, but they say he needs seasoning. He's, what, 87 plate appearances in Double-A and none in Triple-A. And so you can make an argument that catchers need more. I talked to Evan Longoria the other day, and he was in the majors 2 years after he was drafted, and this is the second year, 2 years beyond the draft of 18 that Bart was in. But, you know, one's a third baseman, one's a catcher. And you can argue that the catcher needs more seasoning just because he needs to frame more, he needs to learn the pitchers more, and all that stuff. But I think he's one of the best hitters in camp right now. He could alternate with whomever catches and DH or maybe even play some first. But they have that service time where they don't really want to start the clock. And they can't say that publicly because you know, it's against the CBA to suggest that you're intentionally slowing down a guy's clock. So you get an extra year of free agency and everything. But, yeah, I mean, Bart probably deserves a spot. But a lot of forces against him. He got injured a couple times in the minors, and now the setback we're facing in the world today, you know, prevented him from, you know, probably being in the majors by now. I mean, if you look at Posey, it was May of 2010, exactly 2 years after his draft, and that would mean that in a real world, in a normal world, Posey or Bart could have been playing right now. But, you know, we're in wacky times, so we might not see him for a while.
Check out the book, 24, Life Stories and Lessons from the Say Hey Kid. He covers the Giants for the San Francisco Chronicle. John Shea, kind enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. John, we appreciate the time and the insights. Thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Hey, can't wait to see who finished ahead of the great Willie Mays. Looking forward to this.
Today at 3:30, number 5 will be revealed. Thanks, John.
Thanks.
And then tomorrow at 8:30 and 3:30, and then Friday, numbers 1 and 2 will be revealed at 3:30 in the afternoon. He takes them over Bonds, which is interesting.
Yeah.
He lived right through Bonds, covered Bonds every day. So you got to figure if you're going to take Willie Mays over Bonds, and it's not even close, that says something, considering Bonds put together a couple nice pieces of hitting during his career, boys.
Yeah, a couple decent years in there. But he made an interesting case as far as Mays over Bonds, talking about Bonds as two different players. Early on, five tool, a threat to steal bases. Later in his career, certainly the most prolific power hitter of his generation. Also a good contact and average hitter, but kind of put the speed game on the shelf. And the piece that really was compelling to me was the defensive side. And Nice Guy Steven pointed it out before with the 12 straight gold gloves. And Bonds doesn't have quite the same defensive metrics that Willie Mays did. And of course, that iconic catch low that we can all close our eyes and remember at the Polo Grounds when he goes back so far back. I think the center field fence was in Brooklyn, if I'm not mistaken. Oof. By the time he goes back and catches that with his back to home plate and swivels and throws the ball back to the infield, truly one of baseball's most iconic images.
Yeah, and he was and of course this exercise was to get people's juices flowing and to, you know, give their list and their perspective. And of course he should be, you know, on everyone's list. We get that. And I too understand what he meant, you know, just for people of color as well. I mean, he was, you know, he was a mortar, and he was a guy who he is still a guy who's the things he stood for is great. But even when you think about boxers, you think about, okay, who's the greatest of all time? Some say we got Muhammad Ali, but why? He still lost. There's other guys that were undefeated. It, you know, it's the way in which he carried himself. What made him the greatest? If he was the greatest, was it self-proclaimed? So there's so many things that go to you have to add to this list. And I don't know if it's athlete. It should, if you're really being truthful, we shouldn't have said the greatest athlete. We should have said, who's the most prestigious and most decorated and the most long, because all these things, it's more than just greatest athletes, because Joe Montana, all these different people that we continue to see on this list, a lot of them, you can't say they're the greatest athletes. So it's got to be more to this. And that's why it was an exercise. And that's why everyone will never agree upon everything.
Ultimately, the criteria is laid out and you choose to take whatever avenue you want to take. The arguments can go on for days, but the reality is you take your interpretation of the question and then you go ahead and you frame an answer however you see fit. You know, I went a different route strictly because I knew we were going to get exactly what we're getting. Everybody agreeing on the same top 4 or 5. What's the point of that? When we told this was going to be a two-week exercise, does it make sense for every single host and every single listener to submit the exact same list? That's going to get boring. Try to find a different way to interpret it. At least that's what I thought. I was going to take a different avenue, a little bit of a different interpretation, because you knew for a fact Bonds and Jerry and Joe and Steph and Ricky were going to be in the top 5. And there they are. They're in the top 5. I wouldn't be surprised. I haven't seen the list. I would guess Ricky at 5. Bonds is going to be 4 or 3. Joe is going to be 4 or 3. Recency bias is going to have Steph at 2 or 1, most likely 2. Jerry's going to be 1. Jerry's the easiest one out there. Steph is the most popular one out there. And then I would think Joe, because of Steve Young, could get dinged. But Bonds, being somewhat unlikable and a lot of the voters not being Giants fans, could keep him down at 4. That's how I'm going to see it. And because Ricky hasn't even made the list yet, Ricky's got to be coming up at 5. I do think Andre Ward being left off the list entirely is a disservice to a guy who was born here, raised here, never lost, represented the country in the Olympics and won a gold medal, and then won multiple championships, not just in Vegas. How many times did he fight at Oracle? How many times did he fight down in Fresno? early in his career, he had a lot of fights down there in Fresno. And let me tell you nobody wants to fight in Fresno. Nobody wants to fight in Lemoore. Nobody.
Lowe tried to fight in Lemoore against old Ruben, and that didn't go too well back in 1978 or so.
I came back for a rematch. It wasn't, it was a rematch. There was a rematch. Okay.
And I would imagine he doesn't want a third fight right now, old Rube, whoever he may be, against the BGC, the big grilled cheese. I don't like Ruben's chances against a 49-year-old Lo Neal looking for payback.
Lo, you might be you got knocked out by Ruben. You got knocked out by that billboard. There's a lot of wins down there against you.
Ruben didn't knock me out. He hit me with a two-piece, and he startled me. He got the better of me. But we came back, and we went round two. And the big grilled cheese came out victorious, so I won, and then we end up battling again. So I'm 2-1 against Ruben.
Maybe it's better that we have all these kids staring at their phones, because it sounds like back in the day everyone was just getting naked and wrestling.
You know what? Back in the day, people were tougher. People would go. You know what, Steven? Thank you. Good morning. No, I didn't need that bell right there.
And notice he didn't deny the naked part of it. That's why we continue to say it, because right there you could have been like, no, we didn't naked wrestle, but you know,
I said that every day. I tell you that it's no naked wrestling going on here at all.
Just
at
like
all.
With Maze, but, I wasn't there. I don't know. Should I just go with what I hear?
Oh, my God. But I think that without a doubt, though, even if you were to redo your list, I think there's two guys that beat 1 and 2. Even in what we know now and how we've been getting educated, of course, we should have looked in this more. There's two guys that are 1 and 2 without a doubt, and I think it's Jarrah and Willie. I think if you go through and you have to do this thing, if you're just talking about just guys for what they've done and how they rep in the Bay Area, I think it's a runaway with those two guys. And whatever one you want to put one, it could be debatable.
All right. This day in history, there are some interesting nuggets out there, one in which might go down as a top five great investment of all time, and it pertains to you locally. We're going to have that on the other side. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowe and Dibs.
Find it strange that you would wear clothes to bed.
On 95.7 The Game.
10 years ago today, Joe Lacob and Peter Guber spent $450 million on a turd of a basketball franchise known as the Golden State Warriors.
Whoa.
What do you mean, no?
Joe, it's my turd.
Still a turd, okay? Regardless. Man. Still a turd.
You're not wrong. It just hurts to hear the T word talking about my beloved Warriors. Because at the time, I've been a devout, diehard fan for the better part of my life. So to hear you call my team the T word, you're not wrong. It hurts a little bit, Joe.
Honesty does hurt. It really does. But they are a turd no longer. And Lacob and Goober spending $450 million on them, that price is no longer as well. 10 years ago today, $450 million. It was the most anyone had ever paid for an NBA franchise in history. And they did it for a turd of a franchise. So last time I say that, I promise. But that's what they did. Outbidding Larry Ellison. They get the team. And today, $4.3 billion, according to Forbes. $4.3 billion. Only two NBA teams carry a higher valuation from the Forbes article this past year. Can anyone name who they are? You two work together. You get three chances to name the two. Three chances to name two. The two teams valued higher than the Golden State Warriors by Forbes.
This is like the old 70s NBA, Lo, when you used to get three to make two. You'd get fouled on the shot, and you'd get three free throw attempts to make two. So if you made the first two, you wouldn't get the third. But if you missed one of the first two, you got a third, which was the most cockamamie system ever. So we got three to make two here, Lo.
So we're going to make the first feelings? One. Yeah.
Go ahead, Lo. Let it fly.
The first one, I think that we should go L.A., right? I mean, come on. It's a market, bigger. Wouldn't you think two teams?
Are you thinking red, white, and blue, or are you thinking purple and gold right now? Because old Stevie B bought the clip joint. He bought them for about $2 billion, I believe. So I don't
know.
New
stadium coming.
Yeah, new arena, and right there in Inglewood, up to no good. Are we going purple and gold, Lo?
You gotta go purple and gold because you know who's that guy on that team they have too.
Oh, don't do it.
Don't you think about it? Okay, okay. All right.
You're about to complete a perfect game without saying the L word.
Okay,
Joe, we're gonna go with the Lakers. Joe, we're gonna go with the Los Angeles Lakers as our guess.
Only guy in baseball history who would talk to himself in the ninth inning. And the answer is correct. The Los Angeles Lakers are on the list. So you've got two guesses to get the other team that's valued more than the Warriors. 10 years ago today, Goober and Lacob spent $450 million on the Warriors. According to Forbes this past year, they're worth $4.3 billion, which is number three on the list. Dibs and Lowe getting three guesses to pull it off. They've used one guess. They have one hit. Battleship, baby. The Los Angeles Lakers. Who is the other team?
B8, Joe. We sank your battleship.
B8. Nice, Dibbers.
Are you thinking, even though they're terrible, they are in the Mecca, the Big Apple. What do you think about old Jimmy Dolan's New York Knicks? Do you think that could be a guess here, Lowe?
Dibbers, you know what? I'll follow you. You were hot yesterday. You're back on your heater. Got a one game. You got a one game streak going.
I got
going,
a one game so. Heater going. New York Knicks.
We going
Joe.
With it?
Yes.
That is correct. The New York Knicks are the most valuable of all the franchises. $4.6 billion. The Lakers in second at $4.4 billion. The Warriors in third at $4.3 billion. That is an incredible investment on behalf of Goober and Lacob. $450 million. Take me through what that was like, Dibs, because didn't Ellison get the bid in late? Wasn't there some goofiness that took place with the whole thing?
Yes, and it was all but a done deal that Larry Ellison, the CEO, the owner of Oracle, was going to get it, and he was going to turn this team around. He was going to pump money into the franchise, and Larry Ellison was going to be our white knight. He was going to ride in and rescue this organization that some have described as being a turd at the time. Joe, I would never use such language, but some might. When this Joe Lacobe and somebody by the name of Peter Goober somehow stole the bid, it was stunning. And I think that was partly why fans were a little bit flummoxed and upset at the Chris Mullin retirement ceremony later in that season, because we all thought that it was going to be Ellison who was going to come in and save the day with his deep pockets. So when Joe Lacob and Peter Goober bought the team, it was, oh, man, it's going to be business as usual, from Frank Muley to Chris Cohan to now another group of owners who probably weren't going to be able to right the ship. And, boy, were we wrong. And fortunately, I've had the opportunity to apologize to Joe on a number of different occasions, because I was at the front of the line of haters thinking, this guy's not going to come in and do anything. And then the retirement ceremony happens. He gets booed off the court, and it's like, this is going to be the same old story for Golden State. And boy, was I wrong.
Think about how irrational that is. Think about how irrational it is. Now, I'm not blaming you, because I'm guilty of this. Fans are guilty of this everywhere. But just go through the process here of decision-making and just process how stupid and ignorant all of this is. And again, I'm not singling out you. I'm guilty of it, too. We all are. That's why we're pointing it out. So the team is going to be sold. It's a bad team. And it's accepted by many of you that Larry Ellison is going to be the guy that buys the team. And you're all excited for what reason? You have no Larry Ellison has no basis in running a basketball team, but he has lots of money, right? So you like the idea. You're comfortable with the name. You know the name. So because you have that level of comfort, you're of the belief he's going to come in and do a very good job for you. Instead, two people you've never heard of buy the team. And because you've never heard of them, and because you've already married this other guy with no basketball experience whatsoever, you're now upset, sad, and you're deeming them to be guys who are going to fail. And literally, there's not a credible piece of evidence in front of you that A, Ellison would have done a good job, and B, that Goober and Lacob would have done a bad job. Yet emotionally, you're 100% convinced that the wrong series of events has transpired and you're doomed. Think about how often we go through this nonsense on our day-to-day lives. This is how we operate. This is we make so many bad decisions based on what? There wasn't a single piece of factual evidence and you didn't like the guy. You had no reason for it.
Think about Minnesota and the governor Jesse the Body Ventura, or California with the governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, or Kanye West, who has now bowed out of the presidential race. These are people with huge celebrity and huge names. And so it's human nature and the nature of our society here in America. We attach extra import to these people, where turns out Lacob and Goober, decent little owners, Lo. They've done a pretty good little job. Let me think.
Three
titles in 10 years and a 10x valuation. If my home that I bought 20 years ago would have risen by 10 times its value, I'd be sitting on a $3 million house right now, Lo.
Yeah, we're right there close to a dip, so, you know, checks in the mail.
Think about the low 10 times in 10 years, it went from $450 million to $4.3 billion, a nearly 10x ROI.
You know what I want to hear from? I want to hear the phones. Opening them up at the buzzer, 888-957-9570. Text lines open as well, 888-957-9570. I want you to be honest. When Goober and Lacob bought the team 10 years ago, how did you feel? Who was at the Mullen game booing Joe Lacob? This is a chance to absolve yourself. Come to us, daughters and sons. Come to us. Absolve your sins. We have done that for you in the past. Dibs admitted walking out on the pick at the stick. I walked out on the miracle at the Meadowlands part two. We lied about it for years. Lowe had arousal at some Bonds home run that he may or may not have been in there. It's a very odd story. I can't remember the details. But let's absolve our sins, sons and daughters. 888-957-9570. Were you at the Mullen game booing Joe Lacob? And what did you think of the purchase 10 years ago today when Lacob and Goober bought the team? $450 million.
Wow. And when he came on the show, Joe, and we had, you know, come into the studio and sit down with us and just went through the process of what he was thinking when he was a young lad and his upbringing and how he loved basketball. And he always said, man, I want to own a team one day. And just the hard work and dedication and commitment to excellence and participation and things that he did to get where he was at. Amazing story. So, yeah, a lot of people didn't know his heart and didn't know his story, so didn't know the man. So, of course, you come to conclusions when you knew who another guy who you know the perception, all the money and what you see, the reality, all the money and everything, who he was. Everyone just said, I want this guy. But they didn't know the man who was going to buy the team, his heart and his desire and who he was as a young lad, to always forward thinking, to positive thinking, the reinsurance of that to become his reality.
And the positive thinking is what bristled some fans early on, Lo, because it came across as hubris and braggadocio and arrogance, quite frankly, because he talked about winning championships. And as a Warrior fan, you just wanted to win games. Forget that. You wanted to win a quarter. You wanted to be, you know, after 12 minutes against fill in the blank, you wanted to be up 28-27 instead of down 32-19. Win a quarter, win a game, make the playoffs, win a series. Forget championships. We don't win championships with the Golden State Warriors, and yet he came in talking so big and so grandiose, and fans were like, who is this guy? Give me a break. We're not, you know, the highlight of our entire franchise is an opening round upset of a one seed and then a dunk on a Russian player in a series we lost. That was the highest of the highs, Joe. There was no championship on the horizon.
Absolve yourselves, our sons and daughters. 888-957-9570. What did you think 10 years ago today when Goober and Lacob bought the team? City Boy in San Francisco. City Boy, welcome to the show. Lay it on us.
Oh, man, I was bummed. I'll tell you what. I mean, the one thing I'll say, Joe, is there was some evidence that Ellison would be successful. For one thing, we were stuck in cheap ownership, right? We had Cohan was such a cheapskate, and, you know, we wanted somebody with those deep pockets. And Ellison also, remember, he brought a title to America's Cup, the yachting. You know, he dumped a ton of money into that and just would not be denied. He wanted to win. And then, you know, the venture capital term was thrown around when Lacob's group bought the team. And I think when you hear venture capital, you think somebody that's looking to turn a buck, right? They're looking to flip something. So I think at face value, I thought, oh, my God, a venture capital company is going to buy this thing. They're going to hold on to it. They're going to do what the A's are doing. They're going to spend as little as possible and then try and flip the team for it to double their money, you know, 10 years from now. And it was the exact opposite of that. I couldn't be more ecstatic to have Lacob and Goober. They've been the most amazing owners. But I think that there was that venture capital thing is what turned me off to the Lacob group. And Larry Ellison and the America's Cup and the deep pockets definitely was what I think we were looking for as Warriors fans, was someone to finally really invest in winning, you know. And that's what that winds up being what we got out of Goober and Lacob. So, you know, it all worked out for us.
Thank you, City Boy. You are absolved, my son. 888-957-9570. 10 years ago today, Lacob and Goober spent $450 million on the Golden State Warriors. They beat out Larry Ellison. We want to hear honestly what you thought of back then. 888-957-9570. Again, I love the logic. He spent a ton of money on a yacht and won a race out in the bay. So we thought, yeah, he could definitely win a basketball championship. Like, again, the logic we use when we're desperate, we will use anything we can find to convince ourselves. Confirmation bias, right? Well, he won a boat race. What the hell does winning a boat race have to do with competing in the National Basketball Association? But I'm guilty of that stuff, too. I do the same thing, because when you get desperate, you're not logical. Jorge, San Rafael. Jorge, welcome to the show. Lay it on us, my son. Absolve your sins.
I was at that game, and, you know, everybody else started turning on him and booing, and I just fed off the crowd and kept booing. Obviously, I was upset about the Monte trade, but I was laying it on thick. The moment, it's funny that you use the word repent and absolve yourself, because the moment that I realized that I was wrong was just before we were going into the playoffs, and I believe that was against the Nuggets. And when I realized that, I called in to another radio station, AM Rival, which shall remain nameless. But at that moment, I just wanted to put it out there. Put it on the airwaves, publicly apologize. I didn't see the vision. Obviously, he did, or they did, because they turned it around with quickness.
Appreciate the phone call. Thank you for weighing in.
We got to absolve him, Joe. You got to formally absolve him, Joe. You got to give him the full.
Yeah, the cross.
Boom. Boom.
You are absolved, right. My son. You are absolved.
With the Kalena punctuation, I think that cleanses it. And I was on the air the day after the Mullen retirement ceremony, and we were playing the audio of it, and I was just absolutely delighting and regaling in the hilarity of that moment. The 34-minute ponderous halftime ceremony with the host pontificating and the Rick Barry rescue and Mullen being chagrined and embarrassed. I thought that it was going to be emblematic of what this tenure was going to be for Lacob and Goober, because that was a low point, and he mentioned it to us when he came in studio. It was embarrassing, but he was never deterred from his mission to deliver championships, and that he has done.
After the Monte trade, did anyone in town try to make the case for why it made sense, or was that just universally loathed? Like, that comes up all the time, and I'm not talking about a troll just trying to say, hey, it's good. Like, was there a case to be made as to why that was a good move, or was that just universally hated?
It wasn't universally hated. There were some people who thought, hey, you know, get some rim protection in here with Andrew Bogut once he's able to play. Because remember, when he was traded to the Warriors, he was damaged goods. He wasn't able to play. And it also opened up the backcourt for Steph Curry. And you thought, oh, maybe Curry can develop into a serviceable, good pro, maybe sniff an all-star game someday. Nobody, I don't think, among the fan base thought, oh, yeah, by trading Monte, you're going to get a two-time MVP and a three-time champion out of Steph Curry. Nobody could see that. I don't. Maybe internally in the organization they could see it.
No one could see
it. No fans were saying, good, now that we got Monte gone, Steph's going to become one of the all-time greatest.
Yeah. Like Steve taking over for Joe. Like, there was the belief that Steve was going to step in and do really, really well. You had seen some of that in the past. He got the endorsement from Walsh. So there was comfort there that he would be able to take over the reins, especially late in the career when Montana was breaking down physically.
That's a great comparison because it was obvious that Steve Young was a great player, and that, you know, maybe he wouldn't be as good as Joe, but he could be darn close, Lo.
Yeah, absolutely. And then until Steve Young actually stepped on the field and started having success, when Joe Montana, I was of course, we were all here for that, dibs and are around, and we knew that when Joe left, you saw, man, there was a huge outcry. People were so upset that Joe left. They could not believe that Joe would go to Kansas City, and then Kansas City went on a little heater. You know, you saw him and Marcus Allen get a little run. A lot of people were rooting for Joe Montana in Kansas City. It was a very, very tough departure for Joe Montana.
Dibs, Lowe, and Nice Guy all have their EPL locks coming up in just a moment. But right now, 10 years ago today, Lacob and Goober buy the Warriors for $450 million. 10 years later, Forbes values it at $4.3 billion. How'd you feel at the time? We want honesty. This is a safe space for you to confess your sins and be absolved. Joel in Berkeley, my son, Joel, welcome to the show. Confess your sins.
All right, fellas, look, man, I got to say I was a little more prophetic looking at this thing saying, well, it's a done deal. I mean, there's a new owner. And I knew no matter what, I was going to cheer for the Warriors. So I figured, hey, let's give the new guy a chance. He's got to be better than the old guy, you know? I mean, it couldn't have gotten worse. So I was figuring, you know, I wasn't going to boo the guy. I had my reservation, but I'm going to cheer for somebody. Might as well cheer for the owner and hope that he's not another, you know, on the long string of losers that we had before that. I was just hoping for the best. So, you know, that's me.
Five Hail Marys and five Our Fathers. And my son, you have been absolved. Joel in Berkeley. Kurt in Oakland.
There we go.
Kurt, welcome to the show. Confess your sins, my son. Confess your sins.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Pretty much sums it up. We just needed a change. I was unsure about the makeup and goober, but, you know, anything was better than what we had. And once he traded Monte Ellis for Andrew Bogut, I was one of the happiest Warrior fans you had ever met. And my coworkers had a field day with that because they knew I didn't like Monte that much because the team never grew with Ellis there, and we needed a change from that. And it just got better. And also what people forget is Jim Barnett, once they traded for Andrew Bogut, that was one of the most excited he had ever been calling Warriors games is when they traded for Andrew Bogut because they needed that rim protector, that screen setter. But, yeah, like everybody else, I wanted to change pretty much, and I was still unsure about Lacob and Goober, and I wanted Ellison, but then it worked out in the end, so I'm quite content with what happened.
Appreciate the phone call, and you, my son, have been absolved. Thank you for calling Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Three Hail Marys, four Our Fathers.
Hey.
Weren't y'all just happy that Cohan was gone? Like, was he hated that much? Did anyone like him as an owner?
No, and you have to throw in, I think he was the vice president, or the CEO, Robbie Rao, who was, he was a big part of the dysfunctionality internally in the organization. You had an owner who was a terrible owner, and then you had a front office from the business side, Robbie Rao, who didn't have it together either. You had certain deals that were coming in and going bad, and outside of the We Believe, you can look at those seasons from Cowens to Winters to Musselman to Adelman. It was a new coach. It was a 19-win year. It was 17 wins, 21 wins. It was crap, Joe. I don't like to use the T word, but I will use the C word. It was crap. The only good thing was you could get tickets for pretty cheap, Lo. You could show up. You could scalp it up in the lot and get in there for you know, 10 or 15 bucks. That was the only upside.
That was the upside? You get cheap tickets?
Yeah, cheap tickets, but you're seeing, you know, you're seeing garbage, basically.
Right. Garbage, right. And it, you guys always, you keep alluding to Dibs, too. It was horrible because back in the day you said more Laker fans would show up than Warrior fans, and that was always
and
tough,
you,
right?
And you knew you were getting boated. So you'd go to the Laker-Warrior game, which would be the only sold-out crowd, by the way, and it'd be two-thirds purple and gold. And you'd lose by 25, and all the Laker fans would be, Kobe, just, you know, chirping and shouting the entire time. It was brutal.
EPL locks, English Premier League locks. Dibs, you nailed it yesterday. Chelsea was a huge favorite. You took the 2.5 goals with their opponent. I don't remember who it was, but it won. I know that. Congratulations.
Thank you. Norwich City, they showed a lot of courage yesterday, losing only 1-0 to Chelsea. Today we've got two picks, Joe, including our three-unit smash lock of the week. We're taking Manchester City and Bournemouth. We're going over 3.5 goals combined. Man City's averaging 3 goals per match at home this season. They've been incendiary out of the break. Bournemouth is looking at relegation. City is going to hammer Bournemouth. We're going over 3.5 in the first one. The
nice
second
guy.
Pick, Joe. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was going to give you
pick no, please,
two
please. That's
is the
my
draw
fault.
Of the day. Draw of the day. You've got Burnley, who is in maybe the best form in the entire Premier League out of the break, going up against Wolves. Wolves needs this one. Burnley's playing great. We like the draw here. Plus 225. It's our draw of the day.
All right. very helpful. Thank you very much on those picks. Nice guy. You went against Dibs yesterday. You paid the price. What are you doing today?
I mean, I'm still going to do the same thing because the reasons you're giving out for Manchester City going over are the same reasons that Chelsea should have handed Norwich City, and that's why I took the over for them yesterday. So I'm going to take the under on that. I'm not going to go under on 3.5 goals. I totally agree with everything you're saying, but just with how things are playing out, I'm going to take the under there. And Arsenal-Liverpool are the big game going today. I don't know what the goal total is for that, Dibs. I got 3 right here. I take the under on that. I take the under at 3 goals for Arsenal-Liverpool. So disagree with the Man City-Bournemouth thing. The draw of the day, take it if you want. I'm not going to disagree with that. I mean, those two teams, I don't know what to make of them right now. But I'd go under on Man City versus Bournemouth and under on Arsenal-Liverpool today.
Low, your thoughts? A fade on Dibs?
Yeah, today, believe it or not, I'm going to leave the second game that Dibs is talking about. It's a draw. I'm off that one. So, Dibs, you're going to lose on that one.
Okay.
You know what? Steven didn't sound too comfortable this for the first time in a while. I hear a little, you know, and he's using reasons like, that's why I did it yesterday. So I'm going to go with the Dibbers today on
what?
His first one. Steven, I still love you, but
I'm going to turn your mic Dibbers down today. Now.
One final note.
He actually did.
Yeah. He's got that kind of power.
That's power.
One final note. The title of the story, Bongs, Blunts, and Bombs, The Secret to Surviving the NBA Bubble. Here's a quick excerpt. For players who are eliminated first, a pound of weed is more than enough. But for players on teams that make the conference finals or the NBA finals, that's getting down to about 2 blunts a day. That might be cutting it close. This is from the great Marcus Thompson, who has a tremendous story about weed and the NBA bubble. If you're interested in that sort of thing, give it a read. For us, we're out of here. Bonte, Steiny, and Guru are next. We will catch you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. right here on 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.